Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical isle of Vashon, broadcasting to you live all over the world, streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other. And if you are within range of the voice of Vashon here on the magical isle of Vashon, I'm also broadcasting live to you on 101.9 on the FM band. And there I have now fulfilled the legal requirements of announcing the station and who I am for the Federal Communications Commission. I have before me, of course, the list of words that I am not allowed to say, and just looking at those words, they have occupied at one time or another part of my vocabulary, and so I am in particular conscious that we do not say any of those particular words on the Voice of Vashon. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who have sent me strengthening messages. I was in receipt today of several of those, and they were replete with not only assurances of love, affection, and regard and respect, but also offers of help. I do not accept help very well. My whole training, my whole experience has been one in which I am the one that's up in the captain's chair. And I know that as my journey and adventure and voyage through the rest of my life, I'm going to have to depend more on other people to touch fingertips with me, take my hand. I will try to be gracious and kind and thankful and grateful for all of that. But all of you who know me, and especially those who have sailed with me, know that I take great pains to be the one that puts the hand out, and not the one that puts the hand out in needing some help. I am especially grateful today for those messages which have come to me, because I had to not have a meeting. We are beginning the season in which we do the planning for the low tide celebration, an event which I have headed up for a number of years, and which I am going to head up again this year, and hopefully for a number of years in the future. But I've had to not hold the first of the planning meetings, and I put the signal out to all of the people who are involved with me in this particular event. It is one of the great events. It's one of my favorite events that I work with every year on the Magical Isle, in which we celebrate the lowest tide that we can find in the summertime on a weekend. And we have hundreds, and last year we had almost 1,000 people come. Many of them come from off-island. To make all of this happen, and especially to make it happen for almost no money, but with the expenditure of a great deal of effort on the part of many wonderful people, we start the planning for this. This year it's going to be in the middle of the summer. We start the planning for this in January or February. And I had to move the first of our meetings to early February. And in response to that, I got some beautiful messages back. And for those, I am in particular grateful. The medical list today includes a couple of new additions, and it includes in particular some people that I have known for many, many years. And people who have now started their particular voyage in the fight against their particular cancer. So Steve and all of Captain Joe's people who are in that particular seeking, know that, as always, you are in particular in the palm of my hand. In my own case, it's going to be a very short report. I have started a new and more aggressive treatment plan, and none of the advertised side effects have yet made themselves known to me. In fact, I was indulging myself in some higher levels of tiredness and fatigue from the first go around, and this second one seems to have fixed that, because I am once again, and as always, of good cheer, enthusiastic, and ready more than ever to carry out all of my duties and obligations and privileges. So that's it for the binnacle list for this week, because for those who are new entries, know that the support of all of Captain Joe's people all over the world is flooding in your direction. I know that to be the case. And I also know that that being the case, that it's going to help you as you work your way through your particular challenges. I had a lovely note from Kate during the week. Old Man Winter went over its goals. And in the note that I had from Kate, she made a very gracious acknowledgement of the, in particular, participation of all of Captain Joe's people in their financial generosity to keep the voice, in particular, the public service part of the voice here on the Magical Isle, in which we make public service announcements of all sorts of things that are either threatening to island people or are good things that island people need to know about. So my personal thanks go out to all of Captain Joe's people who contributed to that, and in particular, those who sent me notes, letters, one or two notes wrapped around rocks and tossed through the big plate glass window of the Gene Boss studio. I find them when I come through the door. Usually they are actually in brown paper envelopes. The book continues to be The Finding of Shackleton's Endurance. The title of the book, of course, is The Ship Beneath the Ice. And I am now well over halfway through it, and I am at the place where the organization has found what they believe to be Endurance's wreck. She's 3,000 meters down on the bottom of the Weddell Sea. And in order to find her, they're using a remotely piloted water drones. I find the book to be an interesting one in several respects. First of all, the author, whose name is Menson, M-E-N-S-U-N, that's his first name, and his surname is Bound, B-O-U-N-D, Menson Bound, is, I think, a little bit overly harsh on himself as he examines his own motives and his own actions in the finding of Endurance. The other part of it that I find interesting is that although he pronounces at the beginning of the book that he is somewhat of a revisionist in so far as the Shackleton story is concerned, that as he works his way through the book and as we get closer to the actual finding of Endurance herself down on the bottom of the Weddell Sea at 3,000 meters down, it takes hours for these remotely piloted vehicles to get down there and then to come back up, and they're taking remarkable photographs. Jumping ahead to later on in the book, one of the photographs that Bound has in the book is a photograph of the wreck of Endurance, and it's on the stern, and you can actually see her name. My position on things like this is that she should be left alone and not touched. Go down, take all the photographs you want, but don't try to bring up any artifacts. My feelings about what has happened to Titanic, in which lives were lost, none were lost, of course, in Endurance. That Titanic should have been left, dive on her, take all the photographs you want, but leave her alone. But that's not what happened with Titanic. There are pieces of her that are being shopped around all over the world in exhibits and displays. I don't go to any of those. I went to one, and I felt that I had personally been attacked. I don't go to them anymore. Endurance is protected by the Antarctic Treaty. And I have been reading assiduously Bound's book. I have not read a single mention yet of the Antarctic Treaty. There is a brief acknowledgement of the contribution of Professor Dowdswell, who was the director of Scott Polar Research Institute, a brief mention of that in the acknowledgement section, and then he goes on to acknowledge all sorts of people. I think that he also, in his efforts at downplaying the accomplishments of Shackleton, has done himself a disservice. Furthermore, the book is neither indexed nor does it have a complete bibliography. So I am certainly recommending that anyone who is interested in the Shackleton story read this book. It is not one that I am going to recommend that you buy in the signed hardcover copy. And I certainly don't denigrate the amount of work or effort that went into the actual finding of Endurance. It took two expeditions to do it. The ship that they used was the South African research vessel Agulhas II. And to Antarctic people like me, the word Agulhas goes back to the first of the South African ice-strengthened ships, the first of the Agulhas. And apparently this one was built by the South African government to continue their scientific efforts on the Antarctic continent. Bounds gives a great deal of attention to the ship herself and to both her captain and her ice master. She had both. They took her into the middle of the Weddell Sea, which is where Endurance was crushed. And there were some harrowing, especially to people like me who have broken ice in a few places in the world, of the hazards that the ship was experiencing. In any case, there'll be at least one more report from your captain on the final conclusions that Bounds comes to in the ship beneath the ice. And I recommend that everybody who is a student of the Shackleton story and of Sir Ernest himself read the book. The Canadians are mounting an expedition themselves to the Antarctic. His Majesty's Canadian ship, the Margaret Brooke, has just embarked on what the Canadians are calling an historic Antarctic mission. Interestingly enough, Canada is not a signatory to the Antarctic Treaty. She is a signatory to a couple of the protocols which are attached to the treaty, but she has no bases on the continent. That's one of the requirements of a signatory to the treaty, that they have an actual presence on the continent. The Canadians have no such presence. When they work in Antarctica, they usually do it from one of our bases, in particular from McMurdo. In fact, there's not been any Antarctic deployment of a Canadian vessel to that far south since 1910. And that was only a Cape Horn transit by, at that time, in 1910, I think that would be during the reign of Queen Victoria, at the end of her reign. I'm not quite sure when Victoria died and her son Edward acceded to the throne. But the name of the ship was HMCS Rainbow. So what are the Canadians doing in the South? The proclaimed purpose is Antarctic research, Canada's commitment to international peace and security, and to foster relationships with South American nations. What is interesting here is that because they are not a signatory to the treaty and therefore they have no bases on the Antarctic continent, they also are not obliged to contribute financially to the treaty organization. Only those countries which are signatory to the treaty have the privilege of helping to fund it. Will Canada now continue to expand her operations on the continent? If so, then it would seem to this captain, who has been a part of the enforcement of the Antarctic Treaty, that she also be invited to become a signatory to the treaty and to contribute financially. The ship that they're using is one of a class of Arctic patrol vessels that the Canadians have built just in the last 10 years. And it will be interesting to me to see what they accomplish, where they accomplish it, and for what overall purpose. If you look in your pocket and you look at the label of something you're wearing, it almost certainly says that it was made in China. A note came to me today in which it was proclaimed that the Chinese trade surplus last year, 2024, was around $1 trillion, T-R-I-L-L-I-O-N, $1 trillion. And we all help with that. My part in it was I bought Christmas crackers. All of you out there know what Christmas crackers are. They are an English tradition that I continue in my own family. I bought Christmas crackers, and I bought them from Amazon, and sure enough, they were made in China. Just as a matter of interest, the $1 trillion trade surplus that China enjoys in 2024 was an increase of about 20% over the year before that. Our trade imbalance with China, ours, the United States, I don't know what that number is, but it's pretty high. And all of these things that we have in our pockets, all of these things that we are wearing, most of them, many of them came from China, and they came from China in other than U.S. bottoms. The word bottom is a term for ship's hulls. In the Baltic, there have been some cable damages. And the Finns have, in particular, put on report a Russian vessel that they are pretty certain is the one that dragged over one of their cables. The name of the Russian ship, they even know who she is, and they're pretty they've got one of her anchors. Her name is the Eagle S under the Russian flag. Now, traditionally, as soon as Cyrus Field and the Great Eastern put the first cable across the Atlantic in the 1850s, we have marked on nautical charts the location of these cables, and captains are in particular very careful not to anchor over them. So was this one a done on purpose? We don't know that yet. But the point I make here is that these cables are well marked. They're shown on the charts. There is a chart symbol. Get in the United States, chart number one. Chart number one is actually a booklet. It is not a chart. It is a booklet, and it has all of the symbols that all of us who have chosen to go to sea to make our living are shown in chart number one. You can buy chart number one at Captain's Nautical Supply. Alas, Captain's Nautical Supply no longer has a store here in Seattle. I have to order online. I gave away my copy of chart number one, and I'm about ready to reorder, and at the same time, I'm going to get a copy of the nautical chart for the St. Mary's River, which connects Lake Superior to Lake Huron. The St. Mary's River has a vessel traffic service. It was part of my command when I was the commander in Sault Ste. Marie. In other nautical news, the Algoma Verity, who was aground in the Delaware River, not very far from Philadelphia, under the Bahamas flag, managed to go aground carrying about 45,000 tons of salt. The interesting thing about that, I looked at a photograph of it this morning before I came to come on the air. And she has booms over each one of her hatch covers, so she can lift her own hatch covers. Many bulk ships cannot do that. They have to be alongside a place that will lift the hatch covers for them. Algoma Verity can lift her own hatch covers. And although she's flagged in the Bahamas, any ship which has the word Algoma in her is connected in some way with a Canadian company, Algoma in the Sioux, in Sault Ste. Marie. I have a book that is soon to come out. An island friend, Cindy Hoyt, has just completed, published, and is about ready to have a book signing party for her book called Lucid. And the subtitle is The Funny Thing About Nightmares. This book signing party is at the end of this month on Sunday, the last Sunday of this month. And I will be going to that. I will be buying a copy of that, and I will ask Cindy to write in it. Special treasures of mine are those books which are written by friends, and I ask them to then sign them for me. Many of the books that I have in my Polar Library were written by friends. Most of them have crossed their own bar. And so, Cindy, I wish for you huge sales. I'll do my part. The name of the book is Lucid. It's by Cindy Hoyt, H-O-Y-T. And the subtitle is The Funny Thing About Nightmares, and I don't have the foggiest what that's all about, but I will let all of you know what it's all about. The South China Sea, especially around the second Thomas Shoal, continues to heat up, and the Chinese Coast Guard, with white-hulled vessels and with a slash on the hull, but not cutters. The word cutter belongs just to the United States Coast Guard. And the reason for that is that the type of vessel that we had in 1790 was a type of sailing vessel called a cutter. And we've continued that tradition even unto today, so that the Coast Guard cutter Healy, an icebreaker, of whom I am her sea daddy, is still called a cutter, although she bears absolutely no resemblance to the original Coast Guard or Revenue Cutter Service cutters in those days. In other nautical news, we've talked a little bit about the cable damage with the fins. In a recent meeting, Sweden also proclaimed that they would be looking really hard at increasing their defense budget. And this, of course, is in reaction to what's going on with the Russian bear in the Arctic. In all of these areas that I have talked about today, we've talked about China, we've talked about Finland, we've talked about Antarctica, all of these places are places where the Russian bear has an active interest. How we watch that? Well, so far I've not been seen down in the South China Sea. That's true. That part is true. So the last thing I have to say is I'm ready to expunge another word from our vocabulary. The word is bombshell. I keep seeing it popping up as bombshell exposures of all sorts and all kinds. And to me, that just doesn't fit. Some of these things are not, by any stretch of anybody's imagination, a bombshell. I hereby strike that from my personal vocabulary. Should I have ever used it before, I use it not anymore. And with that, at the end of our half hour together, know that we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. know that all of you, and in particular those who are struggling with some binnacle list entry, whether it's physical or mental or emotional or financial or relationships, whatever it is, know that each of you has my personal attention and my personal concern. And always remember that your Captain Joe is on station and watching properly.